Reducing the amount of alcohol you drink can heal many systems in your body. You might see improvements in your mood, in your sleep, in your immune system. Larry Mueller, and today on the show we're talking about health effects of drinking alcohol, and we'll also hear how excessive alcohol use negatively affects our Wisconsin communities. And a great guest for you, Maureen Bozalaki is director of the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. I want to hear from you. Have you been reconsidering your relationship to alcohol? How often do you drink? How much do you notice it impacts your health? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Maureen, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining in today.
Thank you for having me.
Earlier this month, the U.S. Surgeon General released a new advisory concerning alcohol and cancer. Just to begin this segment, what did it say?
It said quite a bit. And for those of us who've been in the field a while, this was not necessarily new news. This is something that we've known, the association of cancer and alcohol, for a couple of decades at least. But basically, he outlined, you know, the risks of alcohol and cancer. He points out 7 different types of cancer: mouth, throat, voice box, esophagus, breast, liver, and colon and rectum. And there are many, he also points out the mechanisms of what alcohol does when you drink it, which I think is really helpful. There's a great report. I'm sure we can share the link with folks. And then that the higher alcohol consumption increases alcohol-related cancer risk in both men and women. So for those of us who really don't want to go through cancer, you know, reducing or eliminating alcohol from your diet can be a big help with that. And I think the big shocker for a lot of folks is that it increases breast cancer risk in women.
Wow. That's a lot. And I, Claire just let me know, our producer, that we do have a link to the report on our page. So talk@WPR.org/Larry in today's date. And we have that link posted there. So, man, do we know how much we should limit our alcohol intake? In other words, is one drink a week okay, or, you know, one drink a day, or one drink a month?
That's a great question. So our current guidelines are in the process of being updated. So if you look at the United States guidelines currently, they say, you know, one drink per day for women and up to 2 drinks per day for men. But also that is also considered heavy drinking if you drink every day.
I was going to say, that seems like a lot, actually.
Yes. So it's important not to drink every day, I think, is one message. The other message is you can't save it up. So if you want to, you know, have some drinks over the weekend, by not drinking during the week, you know, your body will still react to alcohol. You know, so it's not really recommended to drink more than 1 or 2 a day. And we've also found, and in this report, that even drinking that much does increase your cancer risk. So if you really want to eliminate that cancer risk, that's where you really have to reconsider how much you're drinking. In terms of guidelines, if we look internationally, Canada recently redid their guidelines, and they recommend no more than 2 drinks a week. Okay. So this is Wisconsin, so I know that would be hard for a lot of folks to really get their head around. But I think it's somewhere between what we currently have and where Canada is in terms of, you know, reducing your cancer risk, as well as many other risks that you that come with drinking alcohol.
You know, I read recently, I think it was the Washington Post, that alcohol consumption among younger folks in the country has gone down over time.
Yes.
Is that true?
That is correct. Millennials are drinking less. And so if you look at the age spectrum, the drinking kind of goes up with those in their 50s and 60s and beyond. And in Wisconsin, we kind of drink through the lifespan. But we are seeing trends where our 20 and 30-year-olds in particular are drinking less. And they're much more likely to participate in Dry January than folks who are older. So I thought those numbers were really interesting, that we are seeing our younger people that are drinking less and are, you know, I think pushing some of the other alternative drinks and non-alcoholic beverages or mocktails as an alternative.
Yeah. What's been the response, as long as you mentioned Dry January? Let's talk about that for a minute. Some people take part in it. They don't drink alcohol for the month. How successful is that in your mind? And how could taking a month off improve your health? So I'll give you a two-parter there.
Okay, great, Larry. Well, it's interesting because people do take advantage of it. So people do participate. I don't have numbers on Wisconsin right now, but we do see a number of people doing it. And some people only last a few days or a couple weeks. They might not make it through the whole month. But the point is that folks are trying to reexamine their relationship with alcohol. I'm on my third Dry January, and I find, you know, that it's personally helpful, but the data really speaks for itself. There's a number of benefits. You mentioned those a little bit in your open. Some folks experience some weight loss. People tend to eat a little bit better. They have more energy. And I think when you have just even a touch more energy, you're more likely to make that salad or, you know, kind of do that extra piece, maybe get a little bit more exercise in. People also report clearer skin. We know that it reduces blood sugar. And the big one is better sleep.
Yeah, better sleep.
People universally report that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're director of the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project. I think it'd be worth it to talk a little about the goals of the project and what it's all about.
Well, thank you. The goals of the project are really to support communities and our state in reducing alcohol-related harms. So we do research, we look at existing research, and think about what are the things that communities can do to, to create safer alcohol environments and to reduce alcohol-related harm. And so there's a number of things that communities can do, and even, you know, organizations and civic organizations can do in terms of kind of reducing the availability of alcohol. So reducing, like, you know, sometimes you go to an event, they have drink tickets. Maybe don't do the drink tickets, right? So when people have to pay for their own alcohol, they tend to drink a little bit less. We also help communities look at, you know, maybe they should run alcohol age compliance checks. So to make sure that retailers in their community aren't selling to underage people, which is illegal anyway. And we find that those can be very successful and very positive for everybody involved. We encourage folks to look at how many alcohol licenses that they have in a community, and is that kind of how they want that community to be in terms of, you know, it's kind of like everywhere you look, there seems to be alcohol sold or served in Wisconsin. And that sends a message to our kids and frankly to us, in terms of, you know, that we almost should be drinking. When I don't think that that's what we intended. And so I think being cautious about approving all these new licenses is an important step.
Jason emailed, he says, some people think that beer and wine can be used more often than hard liquor. Is that just wishful thinking?
That's a great question. And that is wishful thinking. Alcohol is alcohol is alcohol. Serving size matters. So when you look at standard serving sizes, it's really important to keep that in mind. That's like a 12-ounce beer at 5%. You've got wine, which is, I believe, 5 ounces. Sorry, I'm off the top of my head. And then, you know, it's like a you know, a regular size shot glass for liquor. We do find many products have many more than one serving in them. So it's one of those things that people should be cautious about. Sometimes, you know, you see those wine in a can or other drinks in a can, and they'll say there's 2 servings in there. So if you only want one, be sure to split that up.
Yeah. George in Wanakee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, George.
Good morning, Larry, and hello, Maureen. I have a question for you, Maureen. You mentioned that the consumption of alcohol among the millennial generation is going down. I'm curious to know if you have any correlation between that and the consumption of THC-infused drinks that are widely available in our state now.
Interesting.
That's a great question. And we don't have data on the THC infused drinks at this point. So I don't have an answer for that. You know, we do know the alcohol consumption is going down. There is some trend data from time to time that does show increases in usage of THC over alcohol. But overall, alcohol is still the number one used drug in Wisconsin.
Yeah. George, thanks for calling. Elizabeth in Stevens Point, we'll give you a chance to join in.
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Yes, I have been listening to the show, and I used to be a traffic safety instructor for Wisconsin. I taught the DUI classes, and I always had to explain to my students how much one drink was. Because, you know, they would think they could drink, you know, a big glass of wine or, you know, one of the larger beers out of a can. I didn't know if you had mentioned, like, the quantity, like the 5 ounces or the 1 1/2 ounce in a mixed drink, which is important for people to know. So they know that, you know, if you have, like, 2 ounces of a hard liquor, that's really a little bit more than you should have.
Yeah. Thanks, Elizabeth. Comment on that, Maureen?
You're exactly right. serving size can be very tricky and really important to keep track of. So sometimes folks order a double at a restaurant, for example, and again, realizing that that's 2 drinks, and if it's not measured, it can be more than that. So it kind of depends on how the operator, you know, operates that. So it is important. And we also find a lot of stuff that people are buying in cans or bottles have more than one serving size. So it can be almost deceiving, you know, when you have products like Four Loko or other products that look like an energy drink. Sometimes they have 3 or 4 or even 5 servings in a single can.
Boo.
So that really changes things.
I guess it would. There are a lot of terms, and this relates to an email, binge drinking, heavy drinking, lots of terms that describe drinking. What's the difference between a binge drinker and a heavy drinker?
That's a great question. So what you're talking about is the definition of excessive alcohol use. So it's a technical term that the CDC defines, the Centers for Disease Control, in 4 ways. One is underage drinking. The other is drinking while pregnant. And then the heavy drinking is 1 to 2 drinks per day. And binge drinking is 4 to 5 drinks in about a 2 to 3 hour period. And the reason why that is defined in that way is when you have 4 to 5 drinks, depending if you're a man or a woman, you're generally at your 0.08 blood alcohol level. So you're intoxicated at that point.
I would think so. that's a fairly short period of time. Although I have to say, and this relates, I think, to strategies that you can use. Here's a personal example. I have once a week I get together with a bunch of friends, actually, and we get together at a local bar and restaurant for about an hour and a half, almost exactly an hour and a half every day, every time, once a week. But a while back, I decided, everybody has a beer usually, but I decided to go with the non-alcohol varieties of beer. Blue Moon, I happen to like. As a matter of fact, that non-alcoholic, I like the taste of it. But anyway, I realized that when I switched that, it really didn't seem to make any difference to anybody else, any of my friends who were there, some who were drinking non-alcohol and some who weren't. Didn't seem to make any difference, and it seemed to... to me, I did not, because I had to drive, and I wasn't going to drive with alcohol. So I felt pretty good about myself. I had a good time anyway. Nobody else seemed to mind. And it was, for me, it turned out to be a good thing. Now, I had a can in front of me, and it was beer-like, but there wasn't any alcohol in it.
Right, and we're finding that's more and more common. I have to applaud, a lot of Madison restaurants and bars, and even around the state, that we see so many more options for folks, a much more extensive non-alcoholic menu. Of course, there's always water or soda, and those kinds of things, but we're definitely seeing many different varieties of non-alcoholic options, non-alcoholic cocktails, and those kinds of things. And I think that does, if you enjoy the taste of something, you don't necessarily have to give that up, but you can either reduce or eliminate the alcohol factor. And I think it's becoming more and more the norm. So it's less, people are feeling more comfortable around that. Although there are social circles where it's like, what? You're not having a drink? And so sometimes I explain, I'm in dry January right now, or, those kinds of things.
But there is something about having something that looks like what everybody else, I swear, there's something about that, having that can in front of you or that cocktail, I rarely would have a cocktail anyway, regardless. There's something about having something that looks like what everybody else is drinking. Is that just me, or is it?
I think it's a social norm. It's something that we're used to, especially in Wisconsin. I think in other parts of the country, you don't see that quite as much. But now we have so many more options, and so people should feel more comfortable, taking part in that. Sometimes people may have a beer and then they might have a non-alcoholic drink, and not continue to have alcohol. So those are all good options.
So I'm wondering other kinds of strategies that we might use. And, if you're sober curious, how do you approach social situations where you might actually be pressured to drink?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons that people decide not to drink. Sometimes it's they're on some medication that may lead to that. Sometimes it's, they really want to get some good sleep. If they've got something, an event coming up or a presentation or, those kinds of things that they want to be ready for. So it's, on the one hand, we really don't have to justify our reason for not drinking alcohol. But I do know that people often feel like they should. And so that's where, thinking through what are your reasons. And better sleep is a big one that I think almost everybody understands.
along with fewer trips to the bathroom during the evening. Getting yourself out of bed to go run to the bathroom more often. What is it about Wisconsin? I mean, we must be close to leading the nation in alcohol consumption.
We are in many aspects, not all, but many. And part of it is, you know, none of this happened overnight. This was kind of a slow evolution where we continued to allow more licenses than, you know, other states, for example, that we have made alcohol available in more places than most other states. You know, many states don't sell in gas stations, for example. We tend to have our festivals where alcohol can be carried around, where again, in many other places, you have a fenced off area where people consume alcohol. So we've just made kind of these changes over time, and they've accumulated to where now alcohol is just, you know, available, it seems like, almost everywhere or at almost every event. And we've come to expect that, where when you travel outside of Wisconsin, you find that that is not the norm. And perhaps something that we should think about, kind of pulling that back a little bit and making sure people have more opportunity to enjoy doing things with their family without alcohol being involved.
Yeah.
Again, that's an important message for kids, that they see their parents taking part in social activities without always having alcohol in their hands. And that, you know, in community groups, really thinking about, you know, we probably don't need to have alcohol, you know, where people could carry it around. Maybe, you know, think about doing the fenced off areas and checking for IDs to make sure kids aren't getting it, but also just creating a safer environment for everybody.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking, one other thing struck me. When I go to almost any other state, the cost is higher, and the taxes on alcohol seem to be, to me at least, to be quite a bit higher elsewhere.
So our beer tax is one of the lowest in the nation. I think we're tied maybe with Oklahoma. Don't quote me. but we have not raised our beer tax since 1969. On a bottle of a beer, it's, you know, much less than even a penny. So that definitely is part of it. Our taxes on wine and distilled spirits is a bit higher, but nowhere near where, for example, the Centers for Disease Control recommends to recoup the cost, the public cost of alcohol, which is more around $2 or so. Because we see the cost of binge drinking, excessive drinking, significantly first through our employers, but we also see it through our health system, through our justice system, through law enforcement, our courts. So many places it shows up when folks binge drink and there's harm to themselves or others.
Treatment options. We have, you know, we're getting up to the last minute or so, a minute and a half of the show. And I'm wondering about treatment. Somebody sitting listening to this and saying, you know what, I'm going to give it a try here and get rid of alcohol for a while or maybe forever. Where's the best place to go?
I think there's a few different places. First of all, your healthcare provider certainly is equipped and should be able to help you with that. The Department of Health Services has a great website that can also help in terms of, you know, finding providers to help you with substance use. And these are really challenging things to do. So we strongly encourage you to engage with professionals in this area to help you with this. It's if this were easy, yeah. you know, it would be one thing, but it's not. And I think that's an important thing. If you feel like your alcohol use is you're not in control of it, I think that's a really important conversation to have with your healthcare provider.
And I imagine you have some things on your website.
We have some. I would also refer you to the Department of Health Services. Our focus is on prevention. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, the CDC has a great thing, and that is on our website, Check Your Drinking. And so it offers just a short kind of quiz about your alcohol use, and it can really help you understand, you know, whether or not there are things that maybe you should be thinking about.
Maureen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for helping us get the year off on the right foot. I appreciate it very much. Thanks, Maureen.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the time.
Maureen Bozalaki is director of the Wisconsin Alcohol Policy Project at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So how's your circadian rhythm or your circadian clock? We're going to talk about that next with the author of a great new book. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.